Welcome to the U.S. National Privacy and Cybersecurity Podcast. My name is Jason Shoup, and I am the executive director of today's sponsor, the Association of Data and Cyber Governance. The association offers a discount on memberships for our podcast listeners when they go to www.adcg.org and use the code word POD. Today, we are led by our host, Jody Westby. We hope you enjoy the episode and don't forget to leave us a rating or a comment.
This is your host, Jody Westby, and today I'm honored to have with us Jamie Cummings, a partner at JM Search and a member of the firm's cybersecurity and IT executives practice. JM Search is the premier retained executive search firm for private equity firms, venture capital firms, portfolio companies, and the Fortune 1000. Jamie's here to talk with us today about the hunt for cybersecurity personnel and to allow us to get his inside view of the market, what companies need and maybe can't find, and how new laws and regulations and global events are impacting the market. So, Jamie, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Let's jump in. Tell us about your background and how you got into recruiting and ended up in cybersecurity, IT, and board recruiting searches.
Well, Jody, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast with you. I've taken a bit of an interesting and circuitous route to where I am today. I grew up in a small farming community in Iowa. I was recruited to the Naval Academy for wrestling. At that time, I really didn't know much of anything about the military, and I decided to go, and it quite frankly changed the trajectory of my life and my career. There, I decided to embark upon a career in special warfare. So I was a SEAL officer for a few years. And subsequently, I'd say I pulled the Jedi mind trick on Stanford. They let me into business school there. And in the private sector, I've been in a variety of what I would say consulting roles. I started initially with the Boston Consulting Group. And about 15 years ago, like a lot of us in executive search, I stumbled into this profession and really haven't looked back. I started over the first 13 years of my career in search. I worked with two of the bigger firms where I learned a great deal. And just over a decade ago, I joined one of the very big firms and was at the right place, right time, reinvented myself, and was given the opportunity to co-launch and co-lead that firm's cybersecurity practice. And what was interesting to me personally, and where there was alignment, is given my military background, I really enjoyed the mission-oriented aspect of working with cybersecurity professionals. I do believe there is very much of a we're all in this together mindset, and the mission is bigger than just us. And that's one thing I really enjoy about being able to recruit and interact with cybersecurity executives.
Wow, Jen Easterly could recruit you as a colleague for her campaign of we're a team. This is a team sport, and shields up, we all have to be in this together.
I think that is the case. It's one thing I really like is that CISOs really do interact with and learn a lot from each other. And it seems like it's a really tight-knit community. At least that's my perspective.
No, I think that's right. That's a value of groups like CISO Executive Network. I mean, that CISOs do learn a lot. And then when an incident happens, they have each other to call and, you know, rely on and to get tips from and assistance or share what happened with their place. And so it's really important. Well, I think a lot of people look at things as before pandemic and after pandemic. But for cybersecurity, I think 2017 was the watershed year. For me, it's before 2017 and after 2017. And there's several reasons for that. The first, which actually began toward the end of 2016, was the release by the shadow brokers of all of these offensive weapons that were stolen from NSA, cyber offensive weapons. And then shortly after that, WikiLeaks released Vault 7, which was stolen cyber offensive weapons and tools and information from the CIA. And that really moved all the cyber criminals up to the league of offensive capabilities. And that was one big thing that gave a boost to the bad actors. And of course, they used that. But that year brought Equifax and the breach, big breach there. But then WannaCry and NotPetya, which were conducted using tools from those releases. Yahoo was that year, Uber breach. So to me, 2017 was the year corporate America woke up and cybersecurity became a real board issue, an enterprise issue, and something that really took on new importance. Do you agree with that? And if so, what can you share about how the new cybersecurity job market has grown in these past 5 years between 2017 and 2022?
Okay, well, I'm actually going to go back a little bit farther than that when I personally first really started focusing on this with an executive search. And I think there were a few firms that were ahead of the game and focused on cybersecurity way before that. But that was really before this recent, I would call it proliferation of roles. But back around 2011 timeframe is when at my prior firm, we and a few other firms, I'm not going to say we were clairvoyant, but I think we saw that there was something going on that was going to drive more demand down the road. Uh-huh. And that's a timeframe we created, really launched that practice. And we started seeing a lot more of either creation of new CISO level roles, or elevation of roles to report higher in the organization or become more prominent and more visible. And I would agree with you, 2017 was an accelerant of that. That was one of those times where the pace picked up with respect to the amount of search work, the number of executive search firms that were launching and growing cybersecurity practices. You know, we'd like to think we were ahead of the game, and maybe in some ways we were back in that 2011 timeframe. But 2016, 2017, as you indicated, that definitely did accelerate the attention at the board level, at executive level across a wide range of industries. And how's that manifested itself since that time? Absolutely, more and more companies who did not have a CISO now do. And we've also seen an increasing broadening of scope of CISOs. And hence, they've had to really build broader skill sets. They've had to build more diversified and broader teams as they expanded their responsibilities. Some of these things that include privacy, physical security, business continuity and disaster recovery, product security, third-party risk management. So that has just led to the broader proliferation and number of cybersecurity roles that are really, really tough to fill. So yeah, the last 5 years or so has been a boon, but it's also a significant challenge because it's tough to fill the roles that everyone has on their organization charts.
Right. You know, it's interesting that when you went back, you said 2011, 2012, and I thought, well, when did Target occur? And Target, I just looked it up on my phone. It was 2013.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Mm-hmm. But that, you know, certainly had an impact too. That was the first time the Institute for Shareholder Services, ISS, they voted that seven of the 10 existing Target board members should not be reelected because they weren't competent to manage the cyber risk. And they did get reelected, but that sent a tremor through boardrooms. You know, I didn't think back far enough. I'm glad you brought up the 2011, 2012, and then with 2013 with Target, that just sort of paved the way to everything that happened in 2016 and 17. So while we're talking about the ISS and board participants, as you work with boards and CISOs and IT executives, how have their views changed over this period of time? Are they looking for different technical skills today or different management skills? And feel free to discuss each one of those if you want as categories, boards, CIOs, CTOs separately if you want, however works for you.
Okay. Well, I think I'll focus on CISOs and CIOs, CTOs, because that's where I tend to spend the majority of my time from an interaction and recruiting perspective. And my general observation is that there's a certain bar you have to chin from a technical perspective as minimum table stakes. But really, at the end of the day, what we are evaluating in candidates to differentiate them is not so much the technical skills, it's the variety of soft skills and the intangibles. That's what's really differentiating and setting apart the top C-level technology and security executives.
What do you mean by that, soft skills and intangibles?
So there are a list of them that I've boiled it down to, not just I, but my colleagues and I. And it comes down to a few things. It's effective communications. Mm-hmm. I would say along with that comes presence and gravitas, that mm-hmm. you belong there. You can have the conversation and you're not just the techie who is barging into the conversation. You belong. Business acumen, mm-hmm. relationship building and management. And that all leads to then at the end of the day, your ability to influence. Mm-hmm. And along with that, the other thing is you can do all the stuff and you can get buy-in and influence people to say, this is why we need to invest in this technology or this process change. But then you also have to be able to build a team to do that. You have to attract the talent. You have to develop them. You have to ideally imbue it within them the same sort of skills that you have developed, because you can't just be an army of one. So they need to build relationships and influence at their level as well. So those are the things both CIOs, CTOs, and CISOs we have found. Those are some of the critical skill sets and attributes you need to have to be successful, because it's all about change management.
That's really interesting. Back in the day, if you were just a geek and knew how to do the technical stuff, everyone just kind of left you alone and that was the person they wanted. But that's not the person you just described. The person you just described is someone that's truly can function as an executive. And
absolutely. It's a must have nowadays. And in fact, I think it was in some ways it was accelerated as far as the level of responsibility and visibility for these types of executives during the pandemic, because all of a sudden they were front and center of, hey, how do we figure out how to overnight, basically, to have an effective workforce work seamlessly and going from on-site to 99% of people working off-site, those who can, and how we do so from safe and secure perspective as possible now that there's expanded attack surface. And so whether they wanted to be or not, these executives were thrust at the forefront of figuring things out that were not just technological. They were really necessary to keep the business running effectively.
Right. And when there's an incident, the executive team, the board wants a CISO who's, as the Queen would say, stay calm and carry on, that doesn't get their hair on fire. And
absolutely. In fact, that's one of the other things I wrote here, Jody, is there are some other things that, you know, from a technical perspective, product security, you know, DevSecOps,
right,
IoT in certain environments. But another thing we found increasingly the clients want to know is, how have you handled incident management? They want a steady pair of hands in a crisis, as you indicated. And that's increasingly something that people want comfortable with. They don't want someone freaking out and learning on the job for the first time on their watch.
Right. So who's ringing your phone? Who's most in demand? Boards, CISOs, CIOs, CTOs? And does that vary by industry sector? I guess that's enough questions I could throw at you in one question.
Well, overall, we do some board work as a firm. Generally speaking, board searches, while they do not infrequently, they're not infrequently done by search firms. Those often tend to be done a little bit more so by the search committees themselves through their own networks. So we don't do as much board work as we do CIOs, CTOs, or sometimes, you know, what we call the CTIO. The CTIO being the T is more of that, call it customer engagement, the I being a little bit more what's called back office, and CISOs, as well as their direct reports. And some roles in particular that are in higher demand within those domains that I have found in speaking with the CIOs, CTOs, and the CISOs, that they're really, really tough to fill are security architect positions, often security operations, and then data analytics. You're probably not surprised to hear that all sorts of organizations now say, we have all this data, what are we going to do with it? So people who are really good in data analytics, it's a relatively new senior function. And the really good folks are in short supply and high demand. And then from an industry perspective, Jody, it's, you know, we've found that it's pretty consistent across all industries. So, because it's a bit of an overused phrase, but a lot of organizations are going through whatever their definition of digital transformation is. And they're looking for good leaders to guide them through that process. So my observation is it's pretty agnostic of industry, just generally speaking.
That's really interesting. You know, ADCG, our Association for Data and Cyber Governance, who sponsors this webinar, We developed a course for data privacy and protection specialists that was really to teach people how to be chief data officers. Companies have chief privacy officers, but the chief privacy officers focus on the data that's subject to privacy regulations, and they don't focus on the rest of the data. And the bulk of what is getting stolen now in so many cases is that non-private data. It is the intellectual property, the confidential proprietary data that, you know, they're after the, or they're after the operational controls and settings and that kind of thing. And so it's really important for companies to understand where all their data is, who owns it, how critical is it, all of those things. And so it's interesting you say about data analytics, but of course that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think what you've overall, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, is that there's a lot more connective tissue between all the different functions within an organization. If you look at privacy, legal, HR, security, it's a lot of people's concerns. It's not siloed in one particular part of the organization. And as you just indicated, data is another one of those where there's tentacles between all these different functions. And so that goes back to some of the softer skills we talked about: effective communications, relationship building, and management and business acumen. If you're not able to talk with other people where they are and understand their priorities, then you're just not going to be effective.
Right. You have to work across the organization. So what's happening on the legal front at the state level with privacy and on the federal level with cybersecurity? There's so much going on legislatively and regulatory front with like California, Virginia, Colorado enacting comprehensive privacy laws that really mirror the global data protection regulation in the EU. Then on the federal level, we have cybersecurity. We have, you know, the DHS's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And there's proposed rules for certain industries at the agency level with government. The SEC has just put out proposed rules that are for boards and executives on governing privacy and cybersecurity. Do you see these legal requirements impacting the market yet? And if so, how? And I'm interested in whether certain industry sectors are more impacted than others.
The short answer is overall, yes. And it's manifests itself in a number of ways that, at least from what we have observed. One is in speaking with CISOs, which I'm fortunate to do on a daily basis, whether or not they actually own it, quote unquote, they are increasingly that's another direction they're being pulled, is privacy. They have to really be working with their counterparts to strike that balance between maintaining a good security posture and addressing privacy concerns. And so we've seen, as you've mentioned, I think you mentioned specifically their privacy officers, they tend to have a little bit more of a legal background, but CISOs have to be able to interact very effectively with them and understand the regulatory regimes, which you have GDPR, and then like you mentioned, some of the different states here in the US. So what we've seen is that as we've been doing searches in particular industries at times, especially if a company plans to or is already working internationally in Europe in particular, they ask us to say, hey, to what extent has this person interacted with the privacy regulations and other team members? So, and I think generally speaking, where we've observed tends to be most prominent is in, not surprisingly, companies that are in industries with a heavy consumer orientation. So retail,
right,
fintech, healthcare. That's what we've seen quite a bit.
Those.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is definitely impacting the information security executives. And in some cases, they actually have privacy tucked under them as part of their scope of responsibilities. So I'll be interested to see how that continues to evolve.
That's a bad thing to do. If people are putting privacy under cybersecurity, that's a segregation of duties problem, because those seem to be two segregated roles.
It hasn't been that common yet, Jody. I've not seen it a ton. Generally, I think what we've seen is a chief privacy officer or a head privacy counsel under legal, and with a really tight coordination between security but not direct reporting.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to governance. The SEC recently came out with cybersecurity requirements for public companies that require, among other things, reporting about material cybersecurity incidents, periodic reporting about policies and procedures to identify and manage cybersecurity risks, and the board of directors' oversight of cybersecurity risk and management's role and their expertise in assessing and managing cybersecurity risk and implementing policies and procedures. The proposal would further require annual reporting or certain proxy disclosure about the board of directors' cybersecurity expertise, if any. I found this very impactful when it came out because for years we've talked about boards getting more engaged. And finally, I think the SEC just decided, well, we just have to tell them they have to do this. Have you seen this? Now, this was just happened in, you know, early March. Have you seen this move your market or heard rumblings about this? Are you thinking that boards are really going to pay attention, or do we just kind of hope they are?
I will say that I have not had very many conversations specific to this regulation, just or legislation just yet. I suspect we will. But what I will say is that based on the conversations I've had with CISOs over the last 18 to 24 months, for other reasons, it does seem that boards are paying more attention overall, more consistently, not just knee-jerk reaction. And a lot of it came from significant increases in ransomware. And I think at the end of the day, the big one that seemed to trigger a lot more attention, and in some cases, CISOs saying boards are freaking out, we're having to, you know, talk them off the ledge a little bit, was Colonial Pipeline. And that one, for some reason, really seemed to get people's attention. Mm-hmm. And what I've found is that CISOs, a lot of them I'm talking to, have said, I've really had to rely on my team, maybe even more so than in the past, to handle some of the day-to-day, because so much of my time is being taken up, not just 15 to 30 minutes in a quarterly board meeting, but pretty consistently with board members and other senior executives trying to understand, hey, what's going on? Are we safe? What can we do? We have a good incident response plan. How do we handle things like this? So I would imagine, I'm speculating here, that this legislation that you referred to will only continue to reinforce that. And I'll be interested to see personally how that drives potentially more information security executives sitting on boards. We haven't seen maybe as much of that as I think we would have anticipated when we launched our practice at my prior firm more than a decade ago. But I do think that we'll start to see a little bit more of it over time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm going to shift here. We've heard so much about possible or likely cyber attacks from Russia after the Russia-Ukraine conflict began. I know that the Ukrainians and Russians have been doing their own cyber attacks toward one another. And DHS is, again, as CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, has put out alerts to the U.S. business community. But has that impacted your market? Have you heard business executives voice concern or feel like they need to bring some good people on board to fortify their team after this Russia-Ukraine conflict started and all these alerts have started coming out from DHS?
What I have seen is that the CISOs and some of the direct reports with whom we've had conversations, they're already pretty busy since the invasion, have been crazy, crazy busy. And some of it, especially companies that have extensive supply chain operations within their business,
right?
The spike in attacks for ransomware, for vendors and their supply chain has gone through the roof. Now, this is something that was already top of mind for a lot of, you know, manufacturing, retail, and other executives in security positions. And a lot of them were already creating specific roles around supply chain security, third-party risk management. And this has only exacerbated that and made it more important. So as far as demand for talent and focus, it's something that I think is heightened, and I would imagine has accelerated that need, because those who were already thinking about it, certainly I would imagine are thinking about it more so now than they were before. So that's the implication that I've seen.
You know, you make a good point where the bad guys have really figured out, we don't have to attack every company. We'll just go attack the vendors, because the vendors are serving so many companies. And of course, you know, the vendors have, like the big ones, certainly Microsoft, Amazon, Salesforce, these companies have excellent cybersecurity programs, and they put millions and millions into it every day, trying to make sure that they're ahead of the game. But we may actually, over time, see attacks on individual, the number of attacks on individual businesses go down, because they're able to, if they can get into the vendor, they can reach so many that they don't have to go to a package company. So I think the shift to more and more vendor work is going to impact the threat environment. But we certainly hope it doesn't make companies lackadaisical, thinking I'm not a vendor, so I don't have to do much. One of the issues that comes up in every single conversation I have with CISOs is reporting structure. Do you see your recruiting for CISOs still reporting to the CIO, or is that model starting to finally fade? In all my governance reports that I did 2008, 2010, 2012, 2015, I always ask about this reporting structure, and the needle basically never moved. They still had the CISO reporting to the CIO. And I hear that as a problem with every time I talk to CISOs. So is that model starting to fade, or is that still kind of the reporting structure? Or if it's changing, how's it changing?
That is something that has, from my perspective, continued to evolve. I don't know if I would say it was fading. But it is definitely, it's shifting a little bit. And some of the searches that we've been involved with recently, anecdotally, a higher percentage of them have reported to an executive other than the CIO. You know, some examples, most prominently, interestingly, recently have been the CFO. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in fintech, industrial, and technology companies, legal. Yep. And I think a lot of times that's, you know, for an organization outside of, say, financial services and insurance, legal is the de facto risk officer, if you think about it.
Right.
So we've seen that industrial manufacturing, technology. I've seen it report to the president in a healthcare organization. Mm-hmm. Recently, I've seen it report to a head of innovation, only because the CEO had already had too many direct reports and decided to shift that. And of course, for quite some time, we've seen it report into risk or more of a general management role in financial services. But a lot of it's because of the multiple lines of defense. Yeah. We do still see a traditional reporting in a lot of places. And I don't know if it's more than half or less than half. But, you know, I'd have to look at some statistics. But my observation is that it is shifting. And I think for good reason. Another observation is, regardless of reporting structure, consistently, CIOs and CISOs will tell me that you still need to have a good copacetic working relationship, because there is going to be connective tissue between the two, for sure. I mean, I think that goes without saying. But I think more and more, as you find CISOs who are reporting elsewhere and they see the benefits of it, there are some now who will tell us, if this reports to the CIO, I'm not interested. So I do think that that will continue to drive an ongoing evolution of philosophy around reporting structure. And over time, I do think it will continue to reduce the number of CISOs who do report to CIOs. That's my observation and my view. I do think it is going to keep moving that direction.
Well, we all hope so. The only observation I will offer from numerous consulting engagements is the CFO can be a very effective place for the CISO to report if that CFO understands IT and is willing to spend money. If you have a CFO that has a tight fist on the budget and is saying, well, that server's still running, we don't need to replace it because it's still working, then you say, yeah, but it's out of support. Well, it's still working, it's fine. And they don't understand that that's bringing a real risk to the company. So if a CFO is on board and really wants to learn about technology and what the spend is about, and is willing to spend money, that's a good reporting place. But if you get a person who isn't in that mode, it can bring a lot of risk to the organization, because you've got then a CFO who's creating risk by the decisions they're making. And there's a lot of broader conversation, because, you know, the CFO is the boss, and he or she says, no, we're not going to spend the money there. And so then the CISO sort of stuck. How are people dealing with this huge shortage of IT and cybersecurity talent? Are they trying to fill out their teams or just get some key players in place and fill in the rest with vendors? What strategies do you see working? There's just such a huge number of unfilled positions. How are companies dealing with this?
I've seen a blend. And if my perspective, that's a necessity, because you speak with a lot of CISOs who will go into an organization and they'll tell me, yeah, you know, I've gotten approval or I'm working on approval to expand the organization. And I've got, you know, sometimes I hear 40 or 50 roles that I need to fill. And if you multiply that by many, many of their peers out there, all of a sudden the math becomes really unsustainable. So what I've seen is a blend. I think at the end of the day, you want to get a number of key leadership roles, and then you need to find some good partners who can really help you with maybe more of the ongoing sort of mundane stuff, if you will. Maybe that's not the best word, but we also do work in the cybersecurity industry, whether it's products or services. And MSSPs, especially those that are focusing on small to medium business,
right?
They've had ample opportunity just because those businesses can't compete for the talent. There's not enough to go around. And one indicator of this being an opportunity is private equity for a few years now has noticed, and they're investing in managed security services providers that do just that. And so I just think from what I've seen, by necessity, there's going to have to be a blend because there's just not enough talent to go around for every organization to have enough FTE to do what they think they need to do.
Exactly. And you know, the threat environment is becoming so sophisticated. Most companies, especially even in the small and up to the large mid-sized business, I mean, a mid-sized business now is still, you know, up to $1 billion. And so that's a pretty big company by the time you have $1 billion in revenue. But for every company to think they're going to fill out their whole team to do all of the security monitoring and to do all of the application work, it just doesn't make sense anymore. It makes so much more sense to find competent vendors that can do that for you and take it off your plate. So it's an interesting shift, and I'm sure it's going to really have an impact on how companies approach this. We've run out of time, but what a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much, Jamie, for being with us and sharing your insights.
Well, thanks for having me. Enjoyed the conversation. I really enjoy talking about this. I think, once again, it is a mission bigger than all of us that's critical. And I appreciate that there's people that are passionate about it. And I really enjoy interacting with them, including yourself. So thanks for the time, Jamie.
Thank you for joining us this week on the U.S. National Privacy and Cybersecurity Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's podcast and want more content about the issues we've covered, you can visit www.adcg.org. The Association for Data and Cyber Governance is the leading association connecting all aspects of data management, cybersecurity, and governance. Our listeners can use the code POD at checkout for a discount on all memberships. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us next week.